This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite Live, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm AB. And folks, this is... Now, we did the show live once before, right? But this is... We're going to be live going forward. We're going to be doing this show right after Dynamite. So if you're not listening to this live, make sure you're joining us right after Dynamite. I'm Aaron. Joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. I'm doing pretty well, you know? I caught a second wind of energy during this tonight's Dynamite, and it's kind of funny. AB, change up the wardrobe. It's late night comfy night. It looks like that you would fit pretty well with a good set of Jon Moxley joggers if they were so on sale.
Absolutely. I got this very sick sweatshirt that has... Can you see that? It's got like
no
furry stuff inside it. Yeah, you guys with me? No,
I respect that. I mean, my sweatshirt.
Look, it's warm.
I mean, my sweatshirt, if you could see, has the furry stuff on the outside. So,
well,
kind of a.
But on the inside, it keeps me warm.
Yeah, kind of a Kaho Kobayashi, like her entrance jacket. Do you
the
like the random
decision?
I was gonna say, do you like the random Joshi I just pull out of nowhere on you that you never expect me to know who Kaho is, but I watch CMLL.
I really do. The big decision for tonight was not the sweatshirt. It was, do I take ZQL before we start recording and risk starting to fall asleep toward the end of the show, or do I just betray by my love of sleeping for later? So we'll find out. We're also joined, of course, by Nate, aka Epitasis. Nate, do you use any sleeping enhancements? What's the word I'm looking for?
I do. I don't do ZQL. I just go straight for the hard stuff and drink straight up NyQuil. Pretty regular standby for me in the winter months here. So what did you decide? Did you decide to take it and fall asleep on us or no?
No, I've decided not to take it so that I could be energetic for this full episode, but no promises going forward.
That seems like the right move for our listeners. Of course, we want to have you at your what is it, 10 p.m. best there. So we'll see how that shakes out. I off the top of the show, feel like this is the right move, so I don't have to go and, you know, work for... How many hours do I work? 8 hours, and then come home and try and sound excited about a TV show from 2 days ago?
Yes, that's a great point. Erin Quinn is in the chat, and she says she didn't watch the show. No spoilers, please. So if everybody
well,
could
that,
respect
that's,
that,
that's a reasonable
it.
Request. I think that's fair. She made her her wishes known right off the top here, so I think it'd be rude of us to ignore her. So spoiler-free review of Dynamite coming at you.
Absolutely, for sure. So if you actually, for this week, if you want to know the results, follow us on Twitter. We're at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. This show is going to be coming out earlier. We hope now that it'll be coming out on Thursdays, now that we're recording late on Wednesday nights. So make sure you subscribe. You'll get those as soon as they come out. You'll have them ready Thursday morning when you're driving to work. Does anybody drive to work anymore? I don't know. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review. And please, of course, subscribe to patreon.com/everythingelite. It's the best way to support the show. And this week, our show is live for all Patreon subscribers. But going forward, on the $8 tier, that will get you exclusive access to the live show each week.
Also, very exciting, exclusive access to a green title in the Discord.
Yes, you will be on the green team if you subscribe to the $8 tier. Very important.
People are very excited about it. The green team maybe a little they have a little bit of an air of superiority. I feel like you see them I guess I would call it class solidarity. The green team's always boosting up the green team. So maybe we need to bring him down a peg also. It's a real tension there.
Nate, buddy, these are our most loyal patrons. So I'd be careful there.
Just being honest about their conduct in the Discord. I'm not going to sugarcoat things. They know who they are.
I disavow Nate's comments. I'd just like to be clear.
On behalf of Aaron, I reavow my comments.
All right. Well, I had fun watching the show. I know Mike did. I haven't seen as many of your comments yet, Nate, so I'm interested to see where we go. We'll get it started with Elite or Delete. And Nate, as is customary, what was your favorite thing from the show tonight?
My favorite thing from the show, probably the easy answer, probably the chalk answer. I think the main event was a lot of fun, and the novelty of the dun-dun-dun opening of the Forbidden Door and having a New Japan guy there, having Excalibur put over the fact, oh, there's a New Japan guy in this match, having the music and the Titantron, having all those elements, and then using them all to do a big, wide-ranging clusterfuck of a match where they fought all over Daly's place was just a lot of fun to watch. It was... Maybe it wasn't like my ideal version of this match, because it was like they had they were just pretty cute about it, right? Like they had their little potato spot, and they had their goofy, you know, little character moments where Kenta and Omega aren't getting along, and they're, you know, doing all these sort of moves in tandem or moves crisscrossing with each other and stuff like that. It wasn't exactly like a knockdown drag out bloody war or something like that. It was, you know, closer to like a fun little jaunt of a Falls Count Anywhere match. But it was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed that. And it was fun and novel seeing a guy like Kenta on AEW just for the novelty of this match or, you know, the little few-week program that they seem to be doing here.
Yeah, and it's something where he did not have to go all out. But Kenta hit a gosh darn double stomp running off the stage through the... Well, it was not through the announcer table. The announcer table did not break, but onto someone on the announcer table. That was like a clear long jump there. Yeah, you'd think he's Bob Bauman out there with that, but it was sick. It was really cool how this match and like the overall feeling of something special was happening with it. And in a lot of ways, I know that it's something that they've had to go to a lot of times for COVID and then reacting to COVID, and it's easier to you could use the arena more so, but it feels like that they've made this Falls Count Anywhere Anything Goes match kind of like a house specialty, and I think that's really awesome as well. And of course, as Thoros has said, that the fact that we got Fang Revive as the theme for Kenta coming out just looking, and it's something that whenever I see Kenta, I'm immediately taken back to one of my favorite matches of all time, Kenta versus Ricky Marvin, the best ever 2.5 minute match ever. So like whenever it's like that Kenta coming out there, it just pops me every time, and it's just a blast. And I mean, Lance Archer, like that's a guy who really was like showing out tonight. Like I know like the big things off the press was that Kenta's here, but Lance Archer might be my MVP of that match. He just rocked all throughout it. It was a great time.
Yeah, Lance Archer, I thought stood out as well. He doesn't, I don't know, like even Moxley's like a little cute and a little goofy in this setup, but Lance Archer doesn't have that same problem. Like he just comes across as a killer most of the time. I will say, like, Lance Archer is also in his 40s, had like a broken back that was surgically repaired and this stuff. He does like, he moves better than Kenta, if we're being honest. Like Kenta was like the novelty of this match. He still goes out and has a lot of good matches at this point in his career. Like having a late career revival, probably, you know, the top 10 wrestling tweeter, which is very important. But he does like Lance Archer, who is twice his size and, you know, well, maybe they're about the same age, does move like considerably better than he does.
Because I don't really watch New Japan, I forget that people probably just see this video with some regularity. But when Fang Revives popped up on the screen, it just blew me away all over again. But nobody else seemed as excited as I did. So I guess it's become common to them. But yeah, it was fun seeing Kenta on AEW. It's just very bizarre I wondered if he's thought about the fact, you know, that he's like opposing NXT, which I just assume he hates. You know, I just assume he has a real vitriol toward NXT. So
I feel pretty confident in saying that he's checking out that rating number like the Good Brothers are. The Good Brothers now fighting this rating war on behalf of the promotion they don't really work for.
Yes, very good. All right, well, good pick. Kenta was great. Mike, what's your elite pick for this week?
So I talked about this a little bit on Dark, but Lee Johnson, like, they made such a big deal of him on Road 2 talking about, like, the big quote that, like, resonated with me is, if I can't do this with Cody, am I ever going to be able to do it? And he cut a really awesome interview there. I had a great I love Road 2. I think everyone knows how much I enjoy that kind of content. And then picking up on that in this match that, I mean, really was made to highlight Lee Johnson. I mean, he had the crazy tornado senton to the outside. He had to deal with someone doing, like, one of the worst catches I've seen and basically powerbombing him to the ring mat or the ringside floor and then getting the win there. I like the fact that it was kind of like a roll-up pin because it does get, like, the air of desperation and, like, you can see, like, it worked for him. He was successful with that. And it really rocked. And then just he's someone that I know, like, everyone calls him like Sting and Sting. Everyone's like, oh, Darby's Sting. But I had this idea in the Discord. Darby is Sting and Lee Johnson is the franchise. That's my idea I'm throwing out there. But I love what they've done with this. And if you're someone who watches Dark constantly, you have seen how much of a great talent Lee Johnson is. And it's great to see that now he is going to be a named commodity going forward. And I'm really excited to see where it goes because y'all know how much I love prospects and I love wrestling and, like, elevation and developing wrestlers. So this is right in my wheelhouse. So that was my big takeaway from tonight.
Look, I think you cannot have enough Stings. WCW was the top promotion in the world when they would have like 60 Stings in the ring at the same time. So if Lee Johnson is Sting and Darby Allin is also Sting, that's just better for AEW. You should have as many Stings on the roster as possible. Plus they have the actual Sting. I think Sting should maybe have multiple personas in this promotion, much like Cody does on the Sammy Guevara vlog. We should get Sting as we have him now. The winter is coming. Cold Iceman Sting. We should get the Insane Icon Sting back. Probably Surfer Sting. Just as many Stings as possible is good. Since I compared wrestlers in the same match when talking about the main event, and I got some traction on this tweet, so I'm just going to break it out on the show as well. I feel like they put Lee Johnson in this match opposite Cesar Bononi to intentionally draw comparisons between the Nightmare Factory student and the WWE Performance Center student to great effect. Because, yeah, you know, Cesar was just like a step different or a step off than the other three guys in the match. But, yeah, very, very successful match as far as, you know, making you want to root for Lee Johnson and then making you cheer when he got the win and got the contract and got his arm raised. And, yeah, that corkscrew dive, I guess it was very cool.
Yeah, I think most matches on Dark, I kind of just post in the Discord a little bit, kind of watch them, you know, unless it's something I'm particularly interested in. And so Bononi, I kind of been like, oh, maybe there's something with this guy. Like maybe he's a guy. And obviously I was keyed into this match since it was on Dynamite. I was like, oh, no, this is not a guy. This is definitely not a guy. Like, you just very obviously looked out of place compared to the other three guys. But yeah, Lee Johnson looked great. It's kind of felt like a very slow burn with Lee Johnson, but, you know, maybe for the best. And now they found a way to kind of fit him in. It looked like after the match, they're maybe starting a little program with him and QT perhaps. So, yeah, there might be something cooking for Big Shoddy. It's exciting.
You know, I kind of like think that I want more table setting when they do something like this. Like, they kind of do the same thing when they initially like made QT also. It's like, oh, he's just Cody's tag partner. He's just a random guy. We're not going to, like, you know, introduce him on Dynamite over weeks and be like, oh, here's the story leading up to this big match. It's kind of like, no, we're just going to do it. We have him doing stuff on Dark. We have him on the road to doing the good promo. Then we're just going to make him the match. And it kind of just works. Like, I kind of think it's fine, even though, like, my internal inclination is to be like, oh, you know, they should have had Lee Johnson in the background for weeks getting these losses so we can see it, you know, more clearly and explicitly coming across in this match. But Like, he just went and won, you know, just like QT and however many months back, just went and showed out in that match. And it worked. Now they're both guys. So, yeah.
I think the thing about it is, and I think this is an issue with that, because I think Nate, you're right about, they kind of decide to do things, and even though there might be some light seeding of stuff, they don't necessarily hit you over the head with it, because it did feel like that a lot of the experience, and I feel like a lot of satisfaction that came out of that is seeing the Road 2 thing and then seeing him on Dark, and it requires a lot of an investment that is not happening on TNT. And I think that that is something that you would hope that they would get better at, because you would think that you would want to emphasize, like, Lee Johnson now is a guy. But if you just watch Tune In for Dynamite and don't watch anything else, you're like, okay, who is this guy? I've seen him, like, lose a couple times now. He suddenly wins and is a thing. So it is something that I've kind of noticed, though. It requires a level of investment that I think that it's good if you get that kind of investment, but I don't think you could think that your stereotypical viewer is going to be as just broken brain as I am and watch absolutely everything.
Yeah, you're probably right. This is a week where I did happen to watch Road 2, so that probably made the Lee Johnson thing work better for me, and there have been weeks where I haven't seen the Road 2 for whatever reason, but, you know, it also enhanced the opening match. They plugged in part of MJF's good promo from that into his segment on this show, so yeah, it might really could just be, oh no, you watched Road 2, that's why this worked for you more than it might have otherwise.
Well, speaking of the opening match, that's going to be my pick. That's my elite pick of the week. I thought it was something new as far as, you know, Joey Janela was the first person we saw on TV. Not sure that was wise, but it was at least something interesting, something different. Darby, though, I think, you know, is a big star, so it's exciting to see Darby there in the opening match. I kind of expected it to be a little dumber, but I guess they were saving all the dumb spots for the main event, which was fine. But I thought this was a lot of fun. There was much discussion in the Discord about whether these guys wrestled in Evolve, and folks, they did. And this was definitely better than that. And I think Darby has reached a form where he can have a good television match with Joey Janela now. So I mean, it's a real feather in the cap of Darby Allin.
Shame on the Discord, because we did discuss their Evolve match. Was it last week's show, I think? Because that was, of course, the show where myself and Oatgan guested and reviewed that match with you, Aaron. And that was discussed. So very disappointed in the Green Team and everyone else.
I did know that we had discussed it recently on a podcast, but we do a lot of them, so I'm not sure which one it was.
But yeah, it was really good. The kind of cheat for, like, I feel like back in the old days of old wrestling, and you'll have whatever, like, old-timey GIF accounts will be like, oh, look at the little details he puts into this arm hook that makes it look super authentic and realistic. And the Darby and Joey Janela version of that is like, no, let's just, like, legitimately dive at each other at super high speeds, and then it just is real, and that makes it very easy to be authentic and realistic, because we're just literally going to throw our bodies at each other and not really care if we hit the floor or whatever. And that kicks ass. Probably definitely a theme to my reviews of matches, which is how unsafe and at what speeds are the dives, and that's how I decide if I like a match or not. And this had a good high speed and, you know, not actually unsafe, but approaching unsafe dives maybe. So it was good. Also, the commentary was good on this and did a good job of putting both guys over and putting over, you know, that they had a history. And, you know, JR seemed like he was especially high on Janela this week, which is, like, not always the reaction you get from JR when you have, you know, the young talents out there who aren't, like, super conventional. So, yeah, this was a very strong opener.
I'm very glad to hear that Nate has come to the Spears house of loving just a bunch of cool moves, cool bumps, and people just colliding at each other as fast as possible, because that's what this match was, and it was great. I like the idea of having differentiating title belts, and the idea that both these belts, like it is that the world title is 1 and then the TNT title is 1A, but, like, the idea that Darby as champion, it is kind of a high-speed match, and, you know, for someone like Joey Janela, he took, like, 3 shotgun drop kicks and did the John Woo bump as well as I've ever seen anyone take the John Woo bump backwards, and just was for what you'd want out of these two guys with outside of Plunder, because Plunder was in the main event. They did exactly what you wanted to do to get people going on the show. And, like, if you're not going to be going and having like a heavy work rate match, and I think this match did have work rate. This is a match that you just want to have crashing cars into each other, and I feel like that worked really well, and you know, it plays into Darby's character, and it just came across really well. This was a match that I was worried about, and I was like, we'll see what's up with Joey Janela here, but it overachieved, and I ended up walking away from this match having a great time, as I did for this episode. I had a great time this episode.
I'm glad to hear it. Our listeners also had a great time. Our listener elite for this week is listener UwuWFI. Their elite pick, Sammy in the Nancy Benoit Memorial shirt. Have to agree. I was not aware of the shirt until Sammy wore it. Somebody dropped a link in the Discord, but very cool shirt.
Sick shirt.
It's on Pro Wrestling Tees. It's like a Dark Side of the Ring collab, so I'm sure you can find it on there if you're interested. Let's move on to the stuff we didn't like. Frankly, not a ton of stuff I didn't like, but a few things I really didn't like. So, Nate, what was your delete pick from this show?
So, show was chock full of a lot of backstage segments, a lot of interviews, a lot of jumping from one segment right to the next segment, which I think they've maybe decided is smart to do on these pre-taped shows, because it you can kind of get away from not having the real crowd so much, and you can also more tightly edit things, you know, when you have this extra time to do backstage segments or whatever it is. I'm going to partly steal Patrick Cosmos's delete here that he's mentioning in the chat, which is the increasingly stupid or obvious or called attention to excuses for having a camera in these backstage segments. They've done a few of these where it's like, okay, they made an excuse for why the camera's there. It's like MJF is going to go, you know, console Santana about their recently deceased family members, but first he's going to grab a camera and said, hey, cameraman, come with me, which like kind of doesn't make sense. You can kind of justify it like, oh, MJF's a phony, he just wants to have this on TV, like that kind of works, but it also is kind of, you know, kind of stretches credulity, because they have been really explicit about, oh, we don't like when there are fake invisible cameras backstage, so we're always going to have an excuse for why the camera's there. So yeah, I think the worst one was probably the one on this episode where Sammy Guevara goes into the Inner Circle locker room, wants to confront MJF, tells everybody else in the Inner Circle to leave. They all walk out of the Inner Circle locker room. He says, cameraman, you stay, because he wants this to be recorded. And then MJF's plan is to get Sammy to say something bad about Chris Jericho and surreptitiously record it on his phone to use against him, even though we can see the entire full conversation is being recorded. And as Chris Jericho has repeatedly said in this promotion, we watch the TV show. We know what happens on the recording. So you can't fake your way around that, really. Like, they really wrote themselves into a corner with that, with like, oh, we're going to do a fake recording, but also we've explicitly called attention to this real recording, which we've previously said everyone watches. It just doesn't work at all. It totally falls apart. I think there maybe is a way to do this to make it work where Sammy just kicks the cameraman out too, and maybe we just get the sound from the other side of the door or something, and we get like, oh, we can hear the phone breaking against the wall, and we can hear MJF yelling about something, and we don't really know what happens. And then maybe we just get like surveillance footage next week or something, so at least we have the gap of time where there's like some intrigue, and maybe we don't know if Sammy's lying about MJF or not, or don't know if MJF's lying. Maybe that's a solution. But yeah, they really just wrote themselves into a corner with this whole thing where we have to justify the camera, but we're going to write angles that necessitate there not being a recording of what's happening.
And it's something that I didn't think about, that Jericho line, Nate, before you said it. Like, I was wondering, like, is he immediately going to come out and say, this is actually what happened, screw you guys, I'm out. Which, I mean, he still said, screw you guys, I'm out. But I was, like, expecting that to happen. And why would you make such emphasis on having the cameraman there for that instance? So, yeah, it's something where, like, they try to have it both ways. And I do think there's a balance that you can reach with having like the stand-up promos with Alex Marvez or Dasha, and being able to like shoot a promo right down the barrel of the camera, and you could have just backstage stuff or like attack stuff where like the cameraman runs and gets there, so it's like an like the invisible cameraman there. It's just something that like it kind of when you make such a big point about that, it kind of rings hollow a little bit in a way. And you kind of create a problem that doesn't need to be a problem. It's a problem of your own making. And I kind of came away with like that one part of the segment. It's like, you didn't really need to do that unless it's going to have an immediate payoff, because people aren't going to remember really that, wait, Sammy made sure the cameraman's here so we could see MJF being sneaky. We already know MJF's sneaky. So it's something that kind of, for everything else in this angle, that I felt like was executed quite well, especially Sammy Guevara in this. It kind of came across going like, just kind of made you like turn your head towards it and go like, what's the deal with
that?
Yeah,
it's just that they called so much attention to it. Like even if you just had this scene play out like in some dark hallway instead of in this locker room, and you had the cameraman like hiding from behind some boxes and he's sort of shooting around things so you can pretend that they don't know he's there. Like, at least then as a viewer, you go, oh, okay, well, I can rationalize that. I can explain that away in my head. But instead, they had people literally talk to the camera and like, hey, this doesn't make any sense, but this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's what irritates me about it, is like, the whole point of saying we're not going to have the invisible cameraman was like, we're not going to do WWE shit. That's what Tony Khan is saying when he says that. But what he does instead is does WWE shit, but tries to justify why he's doing it. It's like, well, just don't do it. Those are your options. Like, there's no reason why Sammy and MJF couldn't do like a backstage promo where they have this same conversation and Dash is there in the middle of them or whatever. And MJF's thing can just be, I believe that this is what you're doing, and that's what I'm going to tell Chris Jericho. You know, like, you can do right. The same angle without this goofiness.
Yeah, or just manipulate his words and try and put him in a new light. So it's like, yeah. you're saying that actually Chris is the problem, and he's made a bad inner circle because I'm this bad influence or whatever. Like, that works right. Just as well as, oh, I want to do this, cheesy third act of a bad movie where the villain is secretly recorded or whatever. Just very silly choice.
Well, somebody pointed this out in the Discord, but it's just like obvious that this is a Jericho idea, and that's why it feels so WWE, because it's like, well, that's, yeah, it's what he did for 25 years or whatever.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
All right. Mike, I know you had a good time, but what did you not have such a good time during?
I mean, that's the hard thing, because even the stuff that usually kind of annoys me, like Nate hit the big one that kind of annoyed me. So I'm thinking fast on my feet. And that's the other thing about doing this right after the show. I haven't had time to let the show sink in a little bit.
Well, good news, because I talked for like 10 minutes. So.
And I spent that 10 minutes trying to think of this thing. And all right, I'm going to do something off the list here. I liked how Inner Circle, there was a clear beat in that storyline. Like, we now have... Now the idea that Sammy's gone away, and now we're...
Mike, we're doing things you don't like, buddy.
Oh, I'm using this to segue into what I didn't like.
We had a... I'm just kidding.
Now I'm all frazzled and I lost my train of thought here. But, but like, y'all know, like, I think that storylines, you need to have these moments, and I think one of the issues, I think, with some of these angles as of late is that we haven't had the next step, the next beat. And then we have the Sting and Taz thing where... they kind of are still doing the same thing. And I feel like we kind of harp on it a little bit. Like, I do think it's kind of funny that they're like, oh, we're dragging Darby Allin in his coffin bag or body bag. Coffin bag, what the fuck, Spears? But his body bag. And I thought like that was like this. But it still kind of feels like a big samey thing. And it makes me wonder, like, how much, like, I was willing to give it a little bit more leeway because Sting was always cool. But now I'm like, all right. Are we going to have like any sort of actual brawl, or are they just going to be so kitty gloves with Sting's health that they're just not going to have like some confrontation? Because I feel like it needs that. And instead, it's just more of just Team Taz just kind of pestering. And it's a shame because Team Taz is one of my favorite acts in the company. Ricky, y'all know how high I'm on Ricky Starks. And it's just like, oh, man. It was really cool when y'all took out all the backstage, all like the merch people that one week, but now you're kind of doing this, and it just kind of felt a little deflating to me.
Yeah, I guess it was a little funny that they set up, you know, the exact same segment that they've done 6 out of the last 8 weeks or whatever, and then we're just like, yeah, we're not even going to get to it this time. We're just going to go straight to the attack angle. That was a little funny. I think so. When Darby feuded with Ricky, did he put a Ricky mask on somebody and drag him around his property behind a truck, or was that somebody else that he feuded with?
No, it was Ricky.
Okay.
They were on his property.
That was a nice little callback, I thought, that they brought that back and, you know, got one up on him for doing that little stunt. But yeah, they put this into a holding pattern, and then I don't know, they don't want to go right to the match because they decided it wasn't hot enough because they were in a holding pattern for 4 weeks or whatever. It does, they do benefit just from like doing any other locations, like doing the church promo with Darby and Sting was like the highlight of this build at this point. And this being in the parking lot was like, okay, at least it's not in the ring again. But yeah, it's losing steam, and that's too bad because we have been very high on the Team Taz versus Darby thing.
Yeah, and we're 3 weeks away. I mean, we're just going to do this three more times or whatever?
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to hit my delete. And this is a me thing. And if I were 10 years older, everyone would probably just tell me to shut the fuck up. And why do I watch new wrestling? But the end of this match, Good Brothers come out, the main event. Good Brothers come out, they do their bit. Nobody comes out to help the good guys. Baby faces should have friends. It doesn't have to be that these are guys who are like close buddies with Mox and Archer, and we always see them together, but like the other baby faces should come out and help them. That's, to me, that's pro wrestling 101, and it always annoys me when it doesn't happen, but it so often doesn't happen that maybe I just need to, stop yelling at clouds and move on with my life.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. They did have a little explanation for this, like at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, oh, the locker room is so far away from the ring. Like, and they just got rid of that because they wanted to do too many run-ins and surprise appearances or whatever, that they just stopped mentioning that. So they could have just been more careful about that and been like, oh, the Good Brothers must have been lying in wait planning this attack the whole time, because here they are. And, you know, Lance Archer, who's had like an uneasy alliance with Pac and Phoenix over the last few weeks, they must have left already because they already had their match. So you can solve it. They just didn't take the time and effort to do it, which is, yeah, which kind of jumps out at you sometimes. Sometimes they really take time and effort to solve things in a satisfying way, but just didn't in this.
Now, I'm going to poke holes in this, AB. It's my turn to play lawyer and cross-examine you on this take as you shake your head and disgust at me for this. So when has Mox really had friends in this promotion? When has Mox had friends in this promotion? His only friend he's ever consistently.
I already said it doesn't have to be his friend. I already said that.
But why would they want to be? Why would a babyface wrestler, when there were four people who are loosely affiliated, just destroying people with weapons, be like, oh, this is my time to go protect them? Like, why would you after you've seen this over the last few weeks?
Because babyfaces stick together, and they don't care about the odds because they're babyfaces.
All right, there. Did you want to go to like the Pikeville auditorium and go see the Young Pistols wrestle? Is that what you're wanting?
I want White Lightning Tim Horner to come out from the back and try to attack the Good Brothers. It doesn't matter if they lose. Like, if they come out and the Good Brothers beat the shit out of them, that's even better. Like, that's good. You know, they don't have to make the save. They just need to try. That's all I'm asking.
So I do think Lance Archer was a monster heel in this company for a very long time.
He still
I'm kind of fine with nobody coming to help him, because it's like, oh, no. Whoever he squashed, Colt Cabana or Marco Stunt, he's not going to come out for Lance because he's really like been a prick. So I kind
of
get that.
I do love the idea of Marco coming out to help Lance, though.
Okay, let's have Marco come out for all these things now. Let's do it.
I also do want to complain that they got a big reaction out of having Jake the Snake hit the short arm clothesline. I think it was on the Brody Memorial show, and everybody's like went wild for it. And now they do it every time he's out there. He did it in the Battle Royale. He got involved in this match. It's like, oh, yes, Jake can do something physical, so let's drive it into the ground right away.
In the chat, Danny H. does mention that Darby, his only, Mox's only friend, was dragged away earlier. So they yeah, could you have...
did. There were some, there were light holes poked in your complaint, I think.
That was a good job for my first time lawyering. I'm proud of myself.
I reject everything that's been said because I think, you know, the pink dream should have come out. Any baby face could have come out. That's all I'm saying.
Pink dream hops the guardrail, top rips off her mask and just cleans house.
No, she was being very safe tonight.
This is good. We can be way more fast and loose with the facts because the chat can fact check us if there's anything we really missed. So this is great for later.
Nice. This will not be the end of the wrong boys, though, at all.
No. Never. Wrong boys ride again. Listener D-Elite, listener super deformed, aka Guy, pops in with, not enough Maki Ito. Have to agree, but at least on this show, I promise you, there will be more Maki Ito later in the show. No ratings talk this week because the ratings don't come out until tomorrow as we're recording this. So
ratings haters,
we don't know about them.
Yeah, ratings haters, be okay about this because... to be quite honest, as soon as I realized this, I was like, you know what? The ratings have been kind of boring at this point. So if there's like interesting rating stuff, I'll pop on Patreon and do a quick thing breaking it down. But, you know, rejoice, ratings haters. We won't.
Yeah, the ratings corner will have to be replaced by whatever people said on the show about the ratings. So
sure.
Typically it's just Jericho now has Demo God in his Chiron for his entrance. Again, Carl Anderson taking joy in the success of the promotion he is not contracted to, defeating NXT really amused me. Also, while I'm at it, Carl Anderson wanting to go too sweet the Stinger just because he was in the Wolfpack also really amused me.
I really loved the big Luke Gallows dot Gallows saying a measly 6'10 for what NXT got.
Whenever they show up, it's something where like I feel like we should be more mature and not find the Good Brother so funny.
Never.
But they are just like whenever they come out of there and they're just Gallows cracks me up every single time. I don't know why, he's just such a crazy person, but it is just an absolute just whenever he's out there and it's like he's going to do something dumb on TV because he knows he can get away with it because this isn't his promotion.
Yeah. I think we made a pretty good argument for still enjoying the Good Brothers, despite, you know, them being very sophomoric and silly on our Talking Shop Mania episodes. Drew in particular, I think, made a good defense of them. But yeah, just Doc, the big Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows talking about how he wants to whiz and kiz, which are euphemisms for smoke weed and cum. And that's all he wants to do is just do those over and over again. I just don't think I'm going to get it tired of it. And when people get mad about it, it makes me enjoy it more. So also it helps that for Luke Gallows, it seems like it's not really voluntary for him. And he kind of just goes into these brief manias, and that he can do it on television is beautiful. I think
this is one of those things, like I've talked about this a lot on the show, but the idea that, I mean, frankly, we really don't represent your average AEW viewer. I think sure. That's fair. And this is one of those things that draws that into sharp relief because I see so many people just hating the Good Brothers. And we have come on here so far and laughed a lot about whatever they were doing each week.
Yeah, I think Doc Gallows should take the TNT title from Darby. That's what I think should happen.
I just want...
The match would rock. Don't tell me the match wouldn't kick ass.
Oh, I'm here for it. I'm here.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Well, maybe the match where Luke wins wouldn't kick ass, but the rematch where Darby wins it back and is the underdog, you know, small guy against the monster would sure. For sure be 4 stars.
I mean, I would hope that after the series, we would get a talking shop where it's like, well, I thought about the guy jumping off the top rope and hitting me with that, but he's like 110 pounds. And just like him doing like his cornet routine about this and like talking about like the Last Supper, like there's a lot of gold here. And then Carl Anderson can make comments about his property.
There is like a shared, like Darby's property is not so different from the Luke Gallows estate. Like, even though they seem like very different, like sides, very different ends of the spectrum in wrestling, like Darby filling up the hot tub on his giant Georgia land with Fruit Loops or whatever was is like that's pretty close to like Luke Gallows humor, except Luke Gallows would have like a really large overweight woman in a bikini in it. But it's like there are two sides of the same
thing. I mean, they probably have the land around the same place too.
Probably.
I'm now imagining the promos of Luke Gallows talking about, you know, cutting whizzing and kissing promos against the straight edge guy. Like, there's a lot of gold there, to be honest.
This is a money feud. It should happen. And then after they feud, they should go in team with each other. And Carl Anderson should spin off join the Hardy Party.
Nate, the only guy in the world who's like, no, I want the Good Brothers, but I'd really prefer to break off Anderson and send him to do something else.
I mean, look, he's very charming. He's very funny, but let's be honest, Luke Gallows is the star of the team.
I mean, you're not wrong. I'm just now imagining Carl Anderson and Big Money Matt like trying to get like a business deal together, and it's just like Carl Anderson's kind of going through the motions because all he wants to be was with Doc Gallows, just wanting to whizzing and kissing, you know.
Hey, if Big Money Matt finds out how much they made on those Talking Shop of Mania shows, then they're in trouble.
Carl trying to keep Rebby away from his wife. All right. The show started off TNT title match. Darby Allin defeated Joey Janela with the coffin drop, which we discussed. We had a Moxley pre-tape where he addresses Kenta, you know, coming out and hitting him. Also, you know, accuses him of carrying around a briefcase like a dork, which I thought was good. He wasn't surprised by last week. He does a little bit of a sell for their IWGP US heavyweight match on February 26th, except he doesn't tell us where we can watch it. But he does. Is this the first time he's like carried the title on AEW television?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, so it gives us a little hard sell for the main event. Then we're in the Inner Circle locker room for the Sammy MJF segment that we've talked about. I guess we covered a lot of the beginning of the show because this led to Cody and Lee Johnson defeating Peter Avalon and Cesar Bononi. Lee rolled up Peter Avalon for his very first win in AEW. Nightmare Factory comes out, or the Nightmare Family, not the Nightmare Factory. That would have been cool. Carly Bravo's out. The Nightmare Family comes out for Lee's first victory. Tony Schiavone's there to interview him. He thanks everyone, all his trainers, even Brandy, but he leaves out QT, and QT looks nonplussed, folks.
I have to think the like the weird emphasis he put on, even Brandy helped me, has to just be in reference to, but not QT.
Yeah.
Like it would be weird if he's like, oh, even Brandy was helpful, unless it's so that QT can get mad about that later.
Yes, we're definitely getting a Lee Johnson versus QT Marshall match.
I'm here for it.
I can't wait, yeah. Personally.
That should be a dark feud, and that they should do this for Lee Johnson's Peter Avalon's pageant provocation title that he won. Like, I want to see QT out there strut his stuff. I mean, I want to see what Jerry Lynn has to say about it as well. But yeah, no, this was, it was like really funny. Like the camera was like kind of almost panned a little bit over to QT. And it was just like, QT was like, during that. It was kind of, it cracked me up. There was a lot of things on the show that cracked me up for dumb reasons. I'm just, there's one moment that we'll talk about later that I had to like put down my phone from on Discord and just get a good like 30 second laugh out of me before I continued.
Dasha, that's a great sell for later in the show, Mike. Dasha is backstage with the Young Bucks. Asked how they got eliminated so early from the tag team battle royale. They say, why don't you ask these guys? And the Good Brothers stroll into the picture. They're bragging about winning the ratings last week. Gallows says, hey, it wasn't you guys. We were out there to distract Private Shardy. And he says they should actually be mad at MJF and Jericho. Matt comes up with the idea that next week he wants to wrestle Santana and Ortiz.
Private Shardy, like, is just comes from the mind of a wrestling genius. Like, Chris Hero should give up his name to Luke Gallows, because if somebody said Private Shardy in the Attitude Era, he would be fucking the most over guy in the history of pro wrestling. Like, that's The Rock level shit. Right there, he would be a WrestleMania main eventer. Yeah, Private Shardy. It's just like inspired.
Yeah, he would definitely, I mean, because it's Luke Gallows, it would probably be a little problematic, but he would definitely have t-shirts that say Private Shardy with the Good Brothers dressed up as Private Party. That'd be funny. They might do that anyway.
could do that anyway. You're playing with fire because, yeah, like you said, he would verge on problematic. I mean, he doesn't really know. Like, they're pretty smart about it, which I also appreciate, is like, you can tell, like, there's no way Doc Ows is not like a chud for sure, but doesn't give you one hint of it on the show. And it's like, fine, I don't care if you're a chud if you are smart enough to hide it from me. And like, that's what, again, wrestling genius in all aspects of the business. Put some respect on Doc Ows' name.
This closed out with the Good Brothers wanting to do the famous hand sign, but the Young Bucks were not so inclined. So yeah, as Nate said, he tried to do it with Sting instead.
Yeah, that's they came up on BTE also, that the Young Bucks thing now is that they are embarrassed to do the two sweet with Guns and Gallows. Like, they just don't want to be seen by the other people, like doing the two sweet, and they feel like it reflects poorly on them, which is funny.
Dosh is with Adam Page, asks if he's going to be tagging with Matt Hardy going forward. Page says no, but Hardy interrupts. Says, okay, I get it. You don't want to be a tag team, but we should at least celebrate. I've rented out a bar for just the two of us, and it's on me. So Paige is in since he doesn't have to pay. He tries to walk away, but he runs into the Dark Order, and John Silver feels a little awkward about their interaction here.
Yeah, John Silver. So they have to cross each other, and which means Adam Page has to tell them, oh, I'm going to go with Matt Hardy, not you guys. And John Silver says, I think, catch you on the flip flop. And then just immediately feels humiliated about saying such a stupid thing. And again, like, if this were Attitude Era, this is pristine pro wrestling skit acting from John Silver, where he immediately oversells how embarrassed and mortified he is by saying this, like, slaps himself on the forehead. And then you see like the look in his eyes as he's going off camera. Just very funny. Big superstar, John.
Hey, I definitely commiserate with John Silver saying a phrase and thinking it's the right phrase, and then immediately being made a point of how dumb you feel there. Anna Jay in the background just staring holes into Hangman was tremendous during this. It was just like a 2-minute segment that was just perfect for what it was. And as Nate said, like, John Silver, like, we haven't had John Silver and Luke Gallows together yet. We need that. Like, those are two that might be oil and water in some ways, but I feel like the energy the two of them throw off could really complement each other real well.
Yeah, this is like, we complained a lot on the show about, like, oh, they're all, every story is about leaving a stable or joining a stable or whatever. But I think it's funny that, like, Hangman's is like, no, he has all these people that are vying for his attention, and the Dark Order one in particular has taken the tenor of a romantic relationship where they're all like in love with him. It's funny. I like it.
Next up, Pac defeated the Hollywood hunk, Ryan Nemeth, with the Black Arrow into the Brutalizer.
He just ate him up. Ate him up. As the resident number one Pac fan, I was here for it. I had a great time.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say about this except if the spectrum is, you know, the Nightmare Factory on one side and the WWE Performance Center on the other side, or your FCW on the other side, Ryan Nemeth closer to the Performance Center side of things than the Nightmare Factory side of things.
We got a video recapping the wedding, but it's also interspersed with Miro's comments. He's mad that the man he took under his wing and treated like a brother turned his back on him. But he knows it's not you, Charles. It's Orange Cassidy. But he says nobody messed with us, so he's going to get some revenge. But this was a funny little video where they had these very, like, artful shots of Penelope with the cake on her face and Kip after all this kind of, like, thrown in the middle. Trent was with Orange Cassidy, and he says, obviously, Orange Cassidy is going to jump out of a cake. Yeah. Dasha, man, just working hard on this episode. She's with Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, and Wardlow next to the ring. She wonders where the rest of the Inner Circle is. Jericho says MJF's going to be out there soon. But Santana and Ortiz and MJF suddenly show up, and MJF says Sammy cheap-shotted him and maybe broke his ribs.
Yeah, it's a smart little way to put this all together where now you have the storyline reason for MJF to get attacked, and now you have some doubt in your mind, like, oh, the Acclaim could beat him here because MJF has a built-in excuse for this. So a good way to, like, make this match maybe a little more meaningful and make you pay a little more attention to it otherwise, because you, it's not a foregone conclusion that Jericho and MJF are going to win. And yeah, I do. MJF is like better at this character stuff and like background character stuff. We've said this before too. Or like even like the skit acting part of it than he is like just those straight ahead promos. So like him selling his anger or like his stuff on the Road to show about the Acclaimed all hits, I think, really well. You know, much better than like his monologue or his campaign speech or whatever that was. So yeah, I thought this another storyline about people entering or leaving stables, but it did come together in a good way here.
What's with the Inner Circle and always doing promos with them right before them coming out for entrances? Like, am I the only one who notices that? Like, it feels like each week before there's an Inner Circle match, they do a promo right before they come out for their entrance. Like, this has to be a trend.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a thing. Like, oh, we're going to, you know, pop interest in this next match by making sure everyone knows, hey, after the break is Jericho. So, you know, you're going to see him now, and that's going to be the tease to see his actual match or something. I wonder if that's where they're thinking.
Well, MJF and Chris Jericho did defeat the Acclaimed. Jericho hit a Judas effect on Max Caster after Hager pushed him off the top rope. After the match, Sammy Guevara came out. Jericho asked him, you know, what's the deal? What's going on with you? Sammy says, I told you if one more thing happened with MJF, I was done. And so I'm out here to tell you I'm done. I quit the Inner Circle. We also saw Marvez catch Sammy leaving the Daly's place. And Sammy said he just needs some time away from this place.
Yeah, good segment. Like, again, Sammy always stands out in these segments, I think, because of his performance ability. Also, it's like he doesn't fuck around. He's just like, no, that's it. I'm leaving. Bye. Doesn't, you know, give him any chance to beg for him to hang around. A lot of to-do made that Sammy exited through the babyface tunnel, which is like kind of a cute thing to keep your eye on.
I'm placing my shot here. I'm calling my shot. He's going to interfere and either stop MJF and Jericho from winning the titles or like come out and like prevent Inner Circle interference. Like, he'll be off TV until Revolution, I think. So calling my shot. I'm probably wrong.
I'm calling my shot as big, like huge, overwhelming star Sammy. Here's why. Last night, watching Dark, the Hollywood hunk comes out. I say, SB, is this guy a hunk or what? She says, no, he's a chump. Then Cesar Bononi comes out. I say, SB, is this guy a hunk? No, she's not in on Cesar Bononi. She says, in fact, she said, I don't really like the term hunk, but I can't think of any hunks in AEW. She's actually the only one who's cute is Sammy Guevara.
It's a good looking kid.
Yeah. So
matinee aisle.
Can't disagree.
He's already won over my wife. And the last person that she, you know, was horny for was Darby Allin, and he's a big star. So I think
I was going to say, she said the only person that's a hunk. And I was going to say, I think she liked Darby Allin. Also, well, what did you get your wife for her birthday?
I can't announce that because
she's going to listen to this.
Come on. I mean, probably not, but she is like a room over, you know. So, and I'm loud.
That just occurred to me, of course, because famously, your wife does share a birthday with Blackpink's Rosé, which is occurring presently in Korea. So,
yes, that is true. They do share a birthday. They're both turning 25. So. It's happening tomorrow. And it's like, we had all these plans of like, which I have to work, so it really doesn't matter. But we had all these plans, but then it came like this huge ice storm today, and probably everything's going to be closed tomorrow. So, brutal. Okay. Matt Hardy and Adam Page are at this bar. This had the most impact vibe of the whole show here. Hardy is pretending like he's drinking. Adam Page has gotten drunk, as he is wont to do. And Matt Hardy says he thinks they have a lot of chemistry. He could make him a huge star. You just got to sign this contract, like his contract with Private Party. And yeah, Hardy does maybe the more annoying camera thing where he says, hey, cameraman, the reason I wanted you here was so if Adam Page is drunk when he sobers up tomorrow and thinks he didn't do this, I'll have proof that he actually did it.
Yeah, like, hey, cameraman, I'm admitting right now that Adam Page is probably not in his right mind and is not capable of making this agreement, but because you're here and it's on camera, somehow that overrides the fact that I'm admitting this. That makes sense, right?
Was there a thing that, like, I'll be honest, I missed, like, if there was a tweet or something that confirmed it, that Page did not sign the actual contract? Like, is that kind of thing? Because I saw, like, a tweet he said, like, don't snitch on me that he said. So is that going to be the thing that's come out of it, or am I just completely off base? I'm probably
So they had Hardy in the foreground talking directly to camera, and I was paying attention to him, and he had something like written on his folder or whatever, and I like couldn't read that on my Fight TV quality, not like, you know, genuine cable HD. And in the background, I was like, oh, I wonder if something's happening in the background where Hangman's not signing that, or he swapped it out or something.
Yeah.
But I was relying on you guys to tell me if that happened.
So Danny in the live chat said it was switched. So he pulled a switcheroo there. So this is
okay.
We might not be as wrong, or we'll be wrong and then corrected. I think that's what's going to happen. Well, a part of the shows now are going to have live Perfect. Corrections that we have to offer.
I love it. This was a great choice.
Absolutely. Tony's out with Sting. We talked about this segment. Then we saw Alex Marvez catch up with Kenny Omega on the golf course. I guess was it you, Mike, who pointed out that he had the Charles Barkley?
No, it wasn't me. Gear on? It wasn't me, but he had the Charles Barkley gear on, and it cracked me up. Like, this is the funniest thing. Like, he looked insane because he had like these wraparound 80s sunglasses, and then a golf polo shirt, and then khakis that did not fit him right, and he had golf shoes on, but they were insane looking golf shoes. And Kenny Omega looked insane, and it cracked me up. Like, this was where I lost my shit for 30 seconds because it was so funny. Kenny Omega playing golf.
It was also Danny H. So not only did Danny correct us as we go along, but Danny also brought the Charles Barkley info. So very good.
Have you guys ever watched like the Charles Barkley golf swing supercut?
Oh, it's great.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay. Very funny. One of the few reliably funny things where you can put it on and never get tired of it, really.
Oh, yeah.
It rocks.
Kenny does a bad shot, but we see Don and whoever else is there. I'm not sure who.
The caddy.
In the background. They're trying to find it and, like, fix it so that it was actually a good shot.
It didn't look that bad. I thought it was probably going to be worse.
Oh, he shot it way past the hole.
Yeah.
I mean, do we think he's a real golfer? Do we think Kenny Omega golfs?
No, and that's why this was...
No way, right?
No.
So I was, like, kind of impressed. It's like, hey, that was in the general direction of the pin.
That's
and not
true.
Like, you know, he didn't stop short in the bunker. Like, you shot out of the bunker on that thing, too.
And that's not an easy shot.
And
no, I was impressed that it, like, headed in the right direction where you could kind of make it work.
And as the person who was cut from the first cut on my high school golf team, I appreciated how bad he was at golf. Yeah. Well, I know you're shaking your head at me, AB. The reason why I did this is because I played soccer and I saw it do a second sport. So I picked a sport that I knew I'd get cut from immediately and I'd just go work out for my athletic credit. But I'm terrible at golf. One of my worst sports.
In eighth grade, I made the varsity basketball team. But the weekend before they announced who made the team, I wrecked on a four-wheeler and broke my arm and my leg.
Hell yeah.
So I was out for the whole season. So I didn't get to play.
Hell yeah.
Anyway. AEW Women's Title Eliminator Tournament first round match. And we got Thunder Rosa defeating Layla Hirsch with the Fire Thunder Driver. A match I was looking forward to, and a match that pretty well delivered, I'd say.
Yeah, it's kind of, maybe I'm easy, but like Thunder Rosa matches always just deliver for me because it always looks like she's laying shit in. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like the same thing as the Darby and Janela Dives. I do have, let me run this by you guys. I feel like Layla Hirsch should not do, she has these high flying moves. The stuff like the moonsault and stuff, you're like pretty impressed. It's like, oh, she's a power wrestler and she can do that. But I kind of wonder if she should do them. She also does a dive that like is not very good. And it's like, maybe you should just like, because everybody does dives. Maybe just like differentiate yourself and be like, no, I'm like the power wrestler in the women's division. I'm not going to do the same dives that everybody else does as like just a standard transition spot or whatever. I feel like that would be just, you know, focus on what you're really good at so that like your dive isn't compared to six other dives on the show and like, you know, is not faring well in that regard.
Yeah, I enjoyed this, but I also felt like that this was a match where the Layla Hirsch haters kind of could put a feather in their cap in a way. I don't think it did really kind of feel like a match where it was Thunder Rosa doing a lot of the more interesting stuff. Like there was some cool stuff from Layla at the beginning of the match, but by the end of it, it was like, oh, I'm going to go for another moonsault and just kind of lost whatever effect it is, like going for the same move and missing it twice. So.
Yeah, I mean, at least that was like part of the story of the match, I guess, where it's like, oh, you know, she shouldn't be doing the moonsault, so they caused her to lose this match. Like that kind of works. But yeah, I just, you know, maybe just like your thing is that like, yeah, you're a power wrestler. You don't leave the center of the ring. You just throw people around all the time would be like a better niche for her to stake out in this division.
Yeah, I think Layla got blown up in the match. It just seemed like when she went for that second power bomb or second moonsault, especially, she seemed to be struggling. But yeah, I agree. It's like, it's not impressive anymore for, you know, we saw this in men's wrestling also of like the big powerhouses suddenly also could do like flips and stuff. It's like, okay, well, yeah, but we're over that now. Like that's already happened. So I think, yeah, it's the same thing with Layla that it's like the women, there aren't a ton of women in the division who are just powerhouses. You know, it's like Nyla and well, I mean, Ty Conti, of course. But yeah, so there is like a spot for her of just like being an ass kicker that's probably going to get her farther than a couple of high spots.
Yeah, or like maybe have one, but it's like really good. Like maybe have the one like spring up moonsault and you're like really great at it. Okay. But yeah, don't you know, I don't feel like every high spot should be in her toolbox when she can find better ways to differentiate herself.
I agree. She should get, she should just get like more like muscled and just become like, I don't know, just a big ass kicker. That's all I'm saying.
What's her name? Rika Saki? Rika?
Yeah, she just become the muscle idol. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Tony is with Jungle Boy, a little pre-tape. He's talking about Dax from FTR. Says, hey, everybody's talking about our match. Never been in a fight like that, but I came out on top. So also, we didn't tell on you. I think that was a thing from last week that FTR was saying they told on them, and that's why they got suspended. Anyway, he says, we didn't want you suspended. I want you to look you in the eye and make you my bitch, he said, which was pretty cringe.
I mean, I've said this for a while about Jungle Boy. Like, the problem is this guy really... He's soft-spoken in a different way than Lee Johnson, where Lee Johnson was able to do like a pretty compelling and emotional thing, but he's not like shouting in the camera. It just felt really awkward. Like, I don't, I really like Jungle Boy as a wrestler, but the idea that people are like, oh, he's this future superstar, it's like, no, he can't do a pre-tape without it coming off as kind of cringe. And I would like to retroactively say this is my delete of the week. Like, I felt like I hated this segment. Like, it just, and Jungle Boy needs to, like, get this experience, but it just was a bad promo, a bad sit-down thing where it just kind of, like, he just very softly says, like, I came in on top. That was a fight like that. We didn't tell on you. And you're just like, oh, come on, man. Like, have a little bit more emotion in your promos.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like, I still think there's like very clear opportunity for him to become like a big babyface star. I feel like, yeah, he just needs to find the lane for him that works in this context of doing a babyface promo. And like, I'm not sure who his model should be for that, but there's somebody that he can look at and be like, okay, that's the kind of tech I should take on this. But yeah, the thing where it's like, oh, you're going to be my bitch is like, that's like the cheap pop thing you say in a promo for a live crowd when you don't have anything else. And this is a pre-tape with no live crowd. And it's like, it doesn't really work. There's just a better lane, better route. I don't know what it is, but hopefully somebody can find it.
And then we just had the main event with Kenny Omega and Kenta defeating John Moxley and Lance Archer. Omega pinned Archer with the One Winged Angel after the Good Brothers interfered. Also, they had to help him pick up Archer. This was like one of the better protection jobs of, you know, beating somebody that you're going to see. So fun match, as we discussed in Elite or D-Elite. All right, we've got a few more things because we still want to get into the women's title eliminator tournament bracket. So we're going to do that. Before we get into that, just want to remind everybody the best way to support the show is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite. We have three tiers. Of course, as we said at the top, if you want to listen to this show live on Wednesday nights right after Dynamite, the $8 tier will get you that. The $5 tier gets you all the audio that we do otherwise. And we do bonus shows. This week on Monday, we had a primer for the Japanese side of the bracket. And Taylor Mainberg, my co-host from Jumping Bomb Audio, our Joshi-centric podcast, joined me. And we talked in depth about all the women on the Joshi side, talked about some recommended matches, the history of their careers, lots of fun stuff. So check that out. Mike showed up with a little tea break on Tuesday to talk about the U.S. Indies.
Well, yeah. So originally I was going to like watch Fight Forever like I did the collective. And then I kind of realized as I was busy that day and wasn't able to watch it live, I was like, in the back of my mind, I didn't really want to watch this anyways. And then all the announcements for Tampa WrestleMania just kind of sent me off. And I made myself a cup of tea, tried to calm down. And I felt like I had like a pretty just calm discussion about my thesis on the North American indie scene and what led to this and what I expect coming out of it. So, and I'm just like a 30-minute, like nice little like talk with your old pal. So that was my tea break.
We also had Light, of course, on Wednesday, where Mike and I previewed Dynamite and reviewed Dark. And we just bullshit usually about something dumb for a while. And then Nate also breaks down BTE and any other hot vlog action. So Light is good. Next week, I don't know what we're going to do.
Actually, I did not cover the Hikaru Shida vlogs from her bathtub. So I cannot claim. I just want to be honest that, you know, in terms of covering the hot vlogs, I did not cover the naked woman in her bathtub vlog.
What about the Keiko Honda vlog? Did you cover that?
I scanned through that. It was like 10 minutes and it was a lot of like, here's an NFL stadium. I did watch more of that than I did the Super Bowl, if that means anything, but did not find a lot of information there to pass along to our lovely patrons who I did not defame earlier in the show.
And of course, if you join the Patreon, join our Discord. It's a lot of fun and you can join the green team. So it's what everybody wants to do. So that's over at patreon.com/everythingelite. We got plenty of more good stuff coming the rest of the month. Okay. Next week on Dynamite, we got FTR versus Matt and Mike.
Yes. Seidel. I'm so stoked. The Yoga Monster makes his AEW debut. I thought he was out of wrestling, but he's back. He did a lot of time in Dragon Gate, but mostly other than like big shows, he was just doing openers and house shows. So it's nice to see that the Yoga Monster is going to make an appearance. It's kind of sad it's not happening against a live crowd because I feel like the Yoga Monster act could get over live.
Something about this promotion just makes lesser known brothers want to come out of retirement to appear.
It's so good. I'm stoked for that. I think that'd be fun.
Then we're going to have Adam Page, Matt Hardy, and Private Party versus TH2 and Chaos Project. Sting is going to call out Team Taz. We've been waiting for that. And another first round match.
I didn't know. Was that honestly advertised?
Yes.
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 Jesus.
Nate.
I hope he does it in the ring with Tony Schiavone.
God.
Team Taz has not been called out enough. No.
Someone needs to hold them accountable.
What do we think? So did Adam Page make Matt Hardy sign a release for Private Party? And then in the match, ooh, Adam Page is going to be like, no, actually, you guys don't have to work for him anymore and send him your money.
That'd be good. I'm not following Impact closely enough to know what's going on with Private
Party.
Yeah,
he does owe Private Party $12, I think. That's like way back
to
BTE's story. There is a relationship there with Adam Page and Private Party, mostly because they all love vodka, I think.
Sure. It's not water, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. First round, another first round matchup in the women's title eliminator tournament, Serena Deeb versus Riho. Riho's first AEW match in 11 months. Pretty
yeah,
wild.
There's a pandemic, yeah.
There is a pandemic, Nate. Not sure if you heard.
So we have both.
No, didn't you hear Biden got elected? So it went away.
Oh, that's right. I would have voted for him.
So we have both the small monster and the yoga monster on the same show.
That's right.
Just pointed out there. I could have, if this wasn't 11:30 night, I'd make a big Monster Express reference here and be my friends, but no, that's not happening. I just made the reference by saying what I was going to say.
Okay, thanks. And the tag titles will be on the line, the Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz, which seems like quite the match to throw on this Dynamite.
Yeah, and this is Impact booking where we have number one contenders for the tag titles, but the Young Bucks are going to defend them first against some other random team picked at random. It's fine. They pretended like they did it in the spur of the moment. So whatever.
All right. Now here's the last big thing we're going to do on the show is we're going to make our picks for the women's title eliminator tournament. I'm not sure how much differences we're going to have, but I guess we'll go one by one and see where we are. So we'll start out on the U.S. side. Layla Hirsch versus Thunder Rosa. No, I'm kidding. Layla Hirsch versus Thunder Rosa, of course.
I did submit my bracket to y'all ahead of time, so I did have a legitimate pick here, and I did pick.
Hey, I tweeted mine, and friend of the show, Rover, said it was pretty much perfect. So
yeah.
That was that.
Yeah. There we go.
And I'm sure Rover knows the results. So
he knew the results.
Somebody's already told him. All right, so we'll start with next week's matchup of Serena Deeb versus Riho. Does everybody have Riho winning that match?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Ty Conti versus Nyla Rose.
Probably the toughest one on this side of the bracket. I went with Nyla.
I went with Ty. But yeah, this was a tough one. I think this is going to be something where this is going to be the big upset in the first round.
Yeah, I went with Ty also. I feel like they are suggesting she's starting a push. And so I just think that's the way they're going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is, if you're going to pick an upset, I think this is a smart one to pick. I'm just going with Nyla's, the former champion, the one that's been, you know, used and protected the most in this company. So probably the chalk pick, but.
I think that's fair. Britt Baker versus Anna Jay. I assume we all have Britt Baker.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll stay on this side of the bracket. So that would mean we would all have Thunder Rosa versus Riho. Who do we have winning that one?
I've got Riho coming out of this. I've got, yeah, Riho is my pick here. I think mostly to preserve, they don't want to go right back to Thunder Rosa and Britt is my guess. So I have Riho beating Rosa to set up a face versus heel semifinal.
Yeah, exact same logic. I have Riho winning here.
Okay, so we got Riho going to the semifinals. I agree. But, I mean, Rosa wouldn't stun me. I just think Riho's back. You got to give her a little jolt. We got a little bit of a difference here. I think Mike and I have Ty versus Britt. Nate, you've got Nyla versus Britt. But do we all have Britt advancing to the semifinal?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right, so that leads us all to Britt versus Riho. And I think the small monster's journey ends here. I think Britt advances to the final.
Yeah, I think Britt is ready for her big push. She's been a highlight of the promotion throughout the pandemic. I think Riho, they don't want to go right back to, especially because she's been out of the promotion for a while. Probably also are not inclined to do a Japanese versus Japanese final. I think Britt. Feel pretty confident about Britt coming out of the U.S. bracket.
Yeah, if Riho, if they said that Riho taped things in Japan, I'd think like, okay, makes perfect sense. You'd have Riho versus whomever, and you'd have that match taped in Japan. But now it's Britt's time. I think this is like the right time for Riho to, or for Britt to be elevated to the title. And I think this is going to be the big move that, I'm not certain when this tournament's over. Like, is it happening at Revolution or is it happening after Revolution? But I think this is going to lead up for Britt becoming women's champion out of this.
So Excalibur definitely, like, going into a sell job for the buying live tickets, said something about, like, they're competing for a chance at the title at Revolution. But that's, like, the closest there's been to a suggestion of where this is going to end up. So not really sure. All right. Let's get over to the Japanese side. Then we all have Britt Baker coming out of the U.S. side. So RIP Britt is basically what we're saying. Starting off with Yuka Sakazaki versus Mei Suruga. And I must say that Tony Schiavone said that he cannot count out Mei Suruga. He'd have a very hard time picking against her.
Yeah, this is a cool match. Have to go with Yuka Sakazaki. She is the known quantity to AEW viewers. She is the, you know, a former top champion in a Japanese Joshi promotion, whereas Mei Suruga is just now, you know, getting her footing kind of in that same promotion. So, yeah, Yuka, I think an easy win, but this should be a very cool match.
I really hope that whatever they're going to do production-wise, if they're just adding in commentary and post, they have to add in commentary and post. Like you're not going to throw up a YouTube video of just matches in an empty ice ribbon dojo. I kind of want Tony Schiavone to do it because I feel like that he would have such a good time. Like, get Tony Schiavone.
Tony and Veda. We're a great team.
That's what I was going to say. Tony and Veda, because I feel like between Mei Suruga, Vinny, and Maki Ito, I want to see Tony Schiavone's, or I want to hear Tony Schiavone's, like, natural reactions, because I feel like he would have, I feel like that Mei Suruga would crack him up and he'd be like, I love Mei Suruga. Now she's my favorite wrestler. So I think that it's Yuka Sakazaki, though.
I'm sorry, guys. I've already actually booked the commentary team on the Japanese bracket primer, and it will be Excalibur, Taz, and Balianaki.
That'd be pretty cool, too, TBH.
I like the idea of Balianaki and Taz on the same commentary team. I feel like that has a good vibe to it. I'm down for that.
Oh, yeah. Good vibes. Yeah, Yuka is obviously winning that match. Now, but there's a couple of really interesting ones here, and I think this is maybe the most interesting one on this side of the bracket. Vinny, aka Japan's Asuka, versus Emi Sakura.
Yeah, tough pick here because you have Emi Sakura, who is another known quantity to AEW, but you know, has probably maxed out in terms of what her push is going to be. Like, she's probably not going to be a future champion at any point, so her getting the previous title challenge is, you know, where she's going to peak. So you can beat her here, I think. And Vinny is, you know, an up-and-coming young talent that I have not seen very much of. I saw the single light tube match, but I understand she's very highly regarded. So this could be, you know, if they have down-the-line plans for a Vinny, then this would be an interesting place to have her get an upset win, I think, over Emmy.
Yeah, and I think that with that setting up a Yuka Sakazaki versus Vinny bracket semifinal match, that's a really hot match there. So I think that for those reasons, and I think that really, yeah, the mileage out of Emi Sakura that they've gotten, I feel like all you're going to really assume to get out of Emi Sakura in this promotion. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting match. I mean, you have a Maestra versus Vinny, who can pretty much do anything. So I think that'd be a pretty cool matchup.
I did actually pick Emmy, though. I did not actually say that, but yes, I did pick Emmy to win.
Yeah, it's interesting because I could easily see Emmy winning, but I so badly want to see Yuka Sakazaki versus Venny that I'm just putting all my psychic energy toward that match happening. So I will say, if this final is going to be at Revolution, I came out the big Assemble show, which is a promotion that basically has, like, matches from every Japanese promotion. It's basically a thing that came up in the pandemic of, like, let's do another thing, you know, for all these promotions. And Vinny and Ryo Mizunami are booked on that show that's on March 8th, I think. So it would be very hard for either of them to be at Revolution. And that leads into our next match, which is Ryo Mizunami versus Maki Ito. And I know, Nate, you said on the TL that you were a little flustered about this match.
Yeah, well, I think this is another one, hard one to pick, because Maki Ito, like, obvious foregone conclusion, future AEW star. That's, like, her dream. You know, you look at her reaction on Twitter that her announcement got, and it's clear that AEW would be like, oh, yeah, we're definitely for sure going to give her a chance because people are already crazy about her. But Ryo Mizunami, also someone who's previously been in AEW, you know, was at Double or Nothing, is the veteran here in this match. Just kind of, I'm inclined to say Maki Ito. That's who I picked as Maki Ito to win here, because you probably want to get two matches out of her for this tournament to get some eyeballs on it. I just, you know, I guess I'm thinking kind of in the Joshi hierarchy that, like, Ryo Mizunami is just like the veteran who is more, would be maybe inclined to be better protected in the, in that sort of hierarchy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but at the same time, as a freelancer, it's not like that she has a backing there other than her veteran status, really. And I know that I was listening to the primer you had, AB, with Taylor, that Taylor brought up the fact that apparently she was pre-pandemic, was looking to come to the States in 2020, or like that was like a plan. So it would make sense for her, but this was like the big coin flip match in the first round. Like everything else, I was pretty certain on who I felt like was going to win in the round of 16. But this was the one where I had to think about, I was like, okay, they're going to try to get more, because Maki Ito with like the Western fan base has more of an appeal than Ryo Mizunami.
Yeah, I also do think I'm kind of assuming that like Hikaru Shida is producing this tournament and putting it together, coordinating it. I'm kind of presuming kind of in conjunction with Emi Sakura, who she's worked with a lot. And I kind of, you know, Ryo Mizunami is somebody who goes through your Gato moves and your Choco pros and stuff. So I just feel like if they're kind of coordinating this and making the decisions, maybe they put her over Maki Ito if that. Yeah, I did pick Maki though.
Yeah, and it's also true that I'm pretty sure that when they announced the bracket and Maki got the big reaction, that the matches had probably already occurred.
Yeah, pretty good chance.
So that probably didn't play anything into it. I think Maki wins, largely because I just assume that the people who would be involved in this are smart enough to know that Maki's the bigger draw and that they're eventually going to want to bring her over, as I think Mike was saying. So it's like, you might as well get two matches out of her and showcase her a little bit. But
yeah, I mean, I think if Kenny's making these decisions, he probably goes, oh, fucking Twitter loves Maki Ito, you know,
right? But
TDE gifts. So,
right. But to me, the even bigger thing is, and this could be Joshi brain, but I assume they are planning to do Maki Ito versus Aja Kong, which is like a match that has a story behind it already.
That was my initial, my first blush reaction was, oh, Maki Ito versus Aja Kong for sure. So,
yeah. So we're all going Maki then, I guess.
And I guess we're all going Aja then after that.
Yeah, Aja Kong versus Rin Katakura. And I misspoke earlier. It's not Ryo Mizunami who's booked on a symbol. It's Rin Katakura. But yeah, I think poor Rin has drawn the short straw here.
Well, that's kind of fine. It's like she's she's probably the least known name to your average AEW fan, maybe, I would guess, or kind of the dark horse selection for the tournament in general. And it's like, okay, she gets a big spotlight by being in this tournament for an American promotion, and in exchange, all she has to do is lose to the living legend Aja Kong. Like, that's a pretty good match. So,
yes, not bad. All right, and, so then I think...
I just had one more thing. And with how Aja Kong is seen and where Ren is in her career, it's a big fact that she has the match against Aja Kong and will go down fighting, and especially considering that she's from Marvelous with Chigusa Nagayo. So, like, that matters. So I think that's like, she'll gain a lot, at least in her career in the short term, out of just having this match to begin with. So it's fine.
Yeah, I also just want to say I was concerned that they were going to put just like promotional partners up against each other in these first round matches, and they didn't do that. So there's a lot of cool matches here. So we had a little bit of difference, but I'm assuming we all have Yuka Sakazaki winning the second round match at the top of this bracket.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yuka over Emmy.
Yeah, Yuka over Vinny. Yeah.
Same. And that, oh God, just, I know that's not going to happen because I'm just dying for it to happen. and then Aja Kong versus Maki, and I assume we all have Aja Kong.
Yep, got Aja Kong. Yeah, you know, that's plays right into Maki being, you know, like fundamentally kind of a loser, having to trying to conquer this living legend of Aja. It's also like politically, it's like, oh yeah, sure. Tokyo Joshi Pro has had Maki Ito lose to Aja Kong. They're going to be fine with Maki Ito losing to Aja Kong. It only like helps Maki Ito's story. And you know, at the same time, they'll have Yuka Sakazaki on my bracket coming out of this thing. So they're more than fine having another roster member lose.
Yeah. And Aja Kong doesn't lose often. So she's going to pick up some wins along the way.
And when Maki Ito beats Aja Kong, it's not going to be on YouTube. It's going to be on a big, important show. So then Yuka versus Aja, and I assume we do have Yuka. I'll have Yuka coming out here.
Oh, interesting assumption. You are correct.
Yes. That is, yes.
That, I don't think it's a super foregone conclusion, but...
No, I agree. I agree.
I have Yuka beating Aja. That would be, I think that's a first time ever match. So that would be a pretty cool win for Yuka Sakazaki.
Yeah, I think it's actually, this was, as soon as I saw the bracket, I was like, oh yeah, no, with how this bracket's laid out, the finals is Yuka Sakazaki versus Aja Kong on the Japanese side, and Yuka wins. Like, that was, they're not flying Aja Kong, and Aja Kong is not flying just to do, like, one match in the States and lose to Britt Baker. So, it's...
Well, yeah, I don't think it's... Because they have... Obviously, they wanted to use Aja Kong more than they have, because they had her do that angle with Awesome Kong. So, again, Aja Kong, like... I don't think it's an impossibility where they say, oh, you know, we'll really make Britt Baker look good by having her beat Aja Kong after she wins this whole tournament. But like that does kind of make sense to me. I don't think it happens, but you know, they've flown Aja Kong to the U.S. to do less.
That's
than lose a big match on TV.
My thought is that you have that built in Britt Baker, Yuka Sakazaki story, but you are right that it's like, if you think about Joshi, it's kind of a leap to imagine Yuka beating Aja. Like, if they were booked on a Tokyo Joshi Pro show, I would really not be sure of who was going to win that match.
Sure, but it's something that I think makes sense here. And again, I think I brought this up last week, but with the way that the quarantine works, I don't think Aja Kong's giving up a full month of dates just to work one match in America. So that was more the point I was making there with Aja Kong.
Yeah. Depends what the check, how much the check is for,
hey,
suppose.
I mean, the forbidden door is open, and we've seen how Tony Khan right now is living his best life. He might just write that check. True. He might just write that check.
Hey, yeah, he's paying out for licensed music for entrances. He's got to pay Aja Kong to lose somewhere along the line. So maybe you pay Aja Kong to come to the States and lose. I did suggest, hey, you know, Aja Kong's last, you know, top flight match, last blowaway match was against Hikaru Shida. So maybe they do want to go run that match back for a worldwide audience. I'm pretty skeptical, but, you know, that's the, you get into crunch time there in those last couple matches when you do have a couple routes you could go and they would make sense.
Yes, I think I assume that we all have Britt winning and winning the winning the tournament over Yuka Sakazaki.
Got Britt beating Yuka Sakazaki and then Britt going on to dethrone Hikaru Shida and becoming the fourth AEW Women's Champion. Riho, Nyla, Shida.
Yes.
Yep. I will say that there is a mythical, speaking of Aja Kong's last great match, there's a mythical Aja Kong versus Sari match that happened in Diana, but I don't think ever made tape.
I mean, that match
does ring a bell.
That match never happened. Sari is a deep seed. You know, I've had this theory for years. Sari is a deep WWE Triple H plant, and that never happened. That never happened. The Mayu Iwatani match they wanted never happened. Never.
I've seen clips of it. I think it did happen.
I mean, AI is pretty smart at this point, guys.
Trump Sari WWE.
That's right. But you were right, Nate, that Aja Kong versus Yuka Sakazaki, not only would it be a first-time match, the only time they've ever been in the ring together was that AEW six-woman tag.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. I mean, Tokyo Joshi Pro, you know, I imagine would be happy about that. Like, hey, yeah, Yuka gets to beat Aja. We don't have to pay for it. We can promote it and promote all our women for X number of weeks. That's, like, a pretty good deal for them, too.
And then you could promote the rematch, man. Still take it that
That's
way.
Right.
You got to make money, brother.
I feel pretty... So the first round of the Japanese side's happening Monday night, 7 o'clock on YouTube. I feel pretty confident I will record some audio on it after it's over. So I expect that will happen. So that'll go up on the Patreon. But that's everything that's coming up soon in AEW. Anything else you guys want to hit before we get out of here?
No.
No, nothing else that I would like to hit.
Okay. Follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And of course, go sign up at patreon.com/everythingelite. Join the green team. That's it. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next time.